so you missed the intro. It's not like you've never heard that before. It's too cold, and there are too many buttons, and, well, I need a producer. But you know what? We're going to get it. We'll get the show underway, and it'll all work out, and there we are, and here we go. I hope you enjoyed getting a chance to listen to Rick Smith in the 3 to 6 slot. He's going to be there for the foreseeable future, and I'm really excited about it because this creates a nice little lineup. You can start with Rick Smith at 3, then me at 6, switch over to Malloy at 9, and wow, what a lineup, huh? Now, I really, really want you to get a chance to listen to Rick because Rick is, as I've said, as good as they come. And frankly, well, he's better than anybody operating in that 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. slot, period. Don't care who. So I'm hoping you will get a chance to listen to Rick. Just tune into the horn 3 hours before you normally do, and Rick will be right there. We've gotten things. See, the station that carried Rick up in PA burnt down. And that necessitated moving to another location, which in turn necessitated a schedule change. So that puts Rick Smith in the 3 to 6 p.m. slot. So I'm hoping you will give a listen because you're going to be tickled pink. You're going to be pleased. If there's any justice in the world, Rick will be the next great pro-labor, lib-progressive talker. He deserves far more credit than he is getting right now. So by all means, check into the Horn Stream 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. right before this show. Every Monday through Friday from pretty much now on for, like I said, the long foreseeable future. Okay? I think that'll be cool. And by the way, just for those of you who have never tried the chat room, head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. I'm informed by our intrepid webmaster, web designer, web maintainer, and oh so many other things, the guy who makes so many things around here work, John Fox, I'm informed by him that the regular front door to the chat room is now fixed. So thank you very much to John for that and for some other things that are in the offing. And this, last night you may recall that I mentioned our friend Alice at Heel and Hollers, who helped out in the big year-end drive to see that the horn was adequately funded and that we could finish out in the black. Well, I've got two pieces of information for you. One, our good buddy Horst, otherwise known as Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C, over at YouTube, Horst Bjorngobler, he who has done so many excellent clips through the course of the past year or so of this program and put the audio up at YouTube. Well, I got a note from Horst today, saying that he heard the mention of Heel and Hollers, that's HEALIN-HOLLERS.com, and was running over there straight away to get some stuff for a gift basket. Meanwhile, we had this note in from Kate on the Front Range in Montana, where we don't know yet if there is any snow, but there darn sure is here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia, and I'm freezing my tuchus off back here because even the Heat Buddy propane heater thingy is not cutting the mustard. We got several inches of snow overnight. A big part of big chunk of uptown Beckley, the old part of town, burnt to the ground last night as well. 2012 is off to a rickety start, to say the very least. But anyway, out on the Front Range, Kate wrote in regard to our friend Alice and Heel and Hollers, and said, for all of you who don't ever believe Malloy and Kathy about Alice's products, and who the hell would you be that you don't, believe them, Kate says. I have just used my first jar of whipped shea mint and still working on my first jar of lemon hemp. These products are fill in your favorite superlative, nominative, subjective, or not. Yeah, awesomeness. She even mails the products to others as gifts. Please support her. She's been supporting Malloy's for a long time, and now she has added her support to the horn. It's time for us to step up and support her small business. She is amazing. Oops, says Kate. That's an adjective. Signed, Kate in Montana with waxed dental floss and still no snow. So I'd say that that's a rousing endorsement for Heel and Hollers. I can't wait to get some here. I have a feeling Agnes will and the girls. And, you know, that's kind of sexist on my part. Because, you know, womanly, yes, but guys like it too. Yes, you're number one in my book too, Agnes. Agnes is back here in the studio, by the way, taking pictures of, I don't know what we would call this, ice station liberal. I'm not, you know, I've joked with you during the hot weather months about, it's naked radio on the horn. Well, it ain't naked radio tonight. Oh, no. Hunting boots, two layers of socks, insulated flannel-lined khakis, two layers of shirting, a navy pea coat, a scarf, and a little black wool hat. That's what the smart, freezing, progressive hillbilly broadcaster is wearing this year.
You look mighty fetching, Bob.
Oh, and I like you, too. Mighty fetching. She talks that way, you know. Mighty fetching. By the way, welcome to the chat room, our good buddy Fritz from Arkansas. Glad to see you there. Yes, David in Tennessee. Thump, thump, is this thing on? Well, yeah, it was. I just didn't have the button right yet, David. I mean, nobody ever accused me of getting everything right all the time. Happy New Year to you too, Marty. And Marty says, Rick Smith over Shannon Moore? I think not. Sorry. Well, you got to give Rick a chance because I like Shannon and everything, but he kind of rolls her up. I mean, there's no competition. There's just not. He's that good. In fact, Bill writing in from Cleveland, he says, I love Rick Smith's work. Plus, he and this old guy, referring to himself in the third person, are both project kids and Cleveland musicians and union card carriers. Hear, hear. And then that's why I say things like, you know, Rick walks the walk and talks the talk. As good or better than anybody out there and the best in that 3-6 time slot. Just saying. Now, where to begin this evening? Have we gotten everything? No, we haven't. Haven't taken care of everything yet. A note in from our buddy John, Dr. John, in New York. Just caught last night's podcast, and first of all, I'm relieved to hear your family's okay. I hope the subsequent checkups continue to show good news. I really hope this wreck situation turns out as well as possible. We both know these things can turn to shit really quickly. Yes, they can. Finding out little bits of information here and there, more and more stuff that just... There's a Bob's corollary to Murphy's Law. You know, Murphy's Law is if anything can go wrong, it will. Bob's corollary is, and at the worst possible moment, if it's possible to be hit by somebody with a dodgy, dummied up, well, never mind. It's just getting more interesting. Anyway, John continues, I wanted to extend a good, though late, New Year's wish to you and the Kincaid clan and the Horn family. I'm generally not much for holidays, holy days, but I do like the New Year, John says, perhaps because I'm an eternal optimist. I like the idea of a clean slate, so I always do a little ritual, do these little rituals on January 1st, sweep out the house and all the old year's troubles, touch base with friends and family, and, of course, cook up the black-eyed peas for health and the collards for wealth. Some year it's bound to work, right? See, that's where I screwed up. I forgot the collards this year. But we did eat hog jowl on New Year's, and I think hog jowl on New Year's comes from the fact that, well, folks couldn't always afford such luxuries, and to eat hog jowl is to literally, when one considers it, eat fairly high on the hog. Anyway, John continues, in the spirit of good starts to the new year, I'd like to offer a contribution challenge this evening. I'll match the first $50 to come in the night you announce it. That would be tonight. It's an easy way to double your Thrifty 250 contribution and ensure a strong beginning to 2012. And again, all the best to you, the family, and the rest of the Hornies. That's what we are. We're the Hornies. And I think that's just darn cute. We'll have a little bit of an inquiry later, probably given one of the stories in the stack. Have a little bit of an inquiry later on that we may need John's expertise, because John is a real live, honest to goodness PhD archaeologist. No amateur he. Me, I'm an archaeology fanboy. I had a cup of coffee with the archaeology department once and couldn't get past physical anthropology because I couldn't understand the professor, so that's why I'm not an archaeologist. For a variety. Well, but anyway, I was born to be an English major, and an English major I am. God, this is weird. We got inches and inches of snow on the ground. Meanwhile, out in North freaking Dakota, next door to Kate, who has no snow on the Front Range, Patty writes in and says, hugs to all. Speaking of the weather, see climate. Just wanted to let y'all know that it was a nice, warm spring day here in the Badlands of North Dakota, Montana. Oh, wait, winter day. Nada for any global warming around here. What the... over. Why does the circus in Iowa not get what is happening? Ah! Well, there are none so blind as those who will not see. And that's kind of where we are. Again, this program has always been a fairly personal affair for me. It's, you know, I tell y'all about what's going on here, you tell me about what's going on there. And last night, and I just want to kind of address this in case, because generally if somebody writes with a question, that means that question has existed in the minds of several other people. It's just the way things work around here. And so I got an email when I arose this morning. Jeanette noting from last night's grammar conversation with Jim. Obama have taken away our Bill of Rights because he's a communist socialist liberal. You really have to see the spelling on that to get the full comedy of it, but I trust me, it's funny. She also added another thought into the mix. And that is this. I think Jeanette had a problem with our moment of shallow last night. Obama signs the NDAA, and we're talking about Dick Clark and Ryan Seacrest? Yeah, we were. And Jeanette adds Pope Agnes and Ferger. Okay, thank you, Jeanette. But yeah, we were. You know why? Because when the Titanic has a great big gaping hole in it and is sucking up icy water for all it is worth, and this is the 100th anniversary year of the Titanic sinking, I do believe. Excuse me. When the Titanic has a great big gaping hole in it and is sucking up water, it does not matter if the progressive community only notices the hole in the hull when the ship is two-thirds of the way under the water. Okay, perhaps I should elaborate on that. There is and has been an outcry over the NDAA, which I understand. I completely understand it. It is disturbing. The language is weaselly and wishy-washy and squishy. And it's the kind of language that lawyers put in legislation to give people in power the ability to do as they wish as opposed to doing as they should. It is an art that other practitioners of the lawyerly arts will recognize as drafting. Okay? And for those, for all the hissy that's being had out there, and it's a full-on war between the so-called Obama bots and the emo progs. Really, it sounds like a Star Trek episode. That's what they're calling each other. All these people on the same ostensibly on the same side of an argument are screaming at each other over whether Obama is a fascist or not. And it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the chief executive is a fascist, if the system in which the chief executive is operating is fascist. Fascism didn't just get here. The hole has been in the boat for a long, long time. But we have a cadre of people who are looking out going, ah! Like it just happened when the boat is already two-thirds of the way under the water. And that's the case with the Bill of Rights. And that's the case with the Constitution. You see, my memory really, really, honest to goodness, does go back further than the 2000 election and the 2001 installation of George W. Pinhead as President of the United States. It does. It goes back and it includes the appointment of a guy who turned out to be a pill-popping junkie freak by the name of William Rehnquist to the Supreme Court of the United States by a man named Richard M. Nixon. The man originally appellated Pinhead. That was Harry Truman's nickname for him, Richard Pinhead Nixon. It includes, among other things, the appointment of freaks like Scalia to the Supreme Court. And then Pappy Bush's appointment of Slappy Thomas. It includes the appointment of a woman who was called a moderate and a centrist, who had never been anything more or less than a right-wing political hackenflack by the name of Sandra Day O'Connor to the court, and Ronald Reagan did that. Oh, look, Ronald Reagan appointed a woman. Oh, he must... That was very forward-thinking of Mr. Reagan. Horse feathers. And, of course, Sandra Day O'Connor would hang on long enough to put politics ahead of the good of the nation in installing George W. Bush into the presidency of the White House, as opposed to simply letting the votes be counted, and then promptly retire to a cacophony of for-profit 1% media types saying,
"She was a centrist. Oh, she was the moderate voice in the court."
Bite me. No, my memory goes back a long way. My memory goes back to the dissent issued by Justice Brennan in a Supreme Court case from the 80s called U.S. v. Leon, in which a majority held that the cops can break down your door, do most anything they want to, whip you, beat you, shoot you, as long as they later claim that, and do it, and here's the fun part with U.S. v. Leon, do it all by mistake. Have the wrong address, the wrong family. They can do all of that as long as they later say, but we were acting in good faith. You see, if you read the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, it doesn't say, it says, shall be secure in their persons, papers, and effects. And it doesn't say as long as the cops are acting in good faith. Or if they're acting in bad faith. There just aren't any caveats to the Fourth Amendment. But for those who only became politically aware somewhere around the advent of George W. Dimleader. I still giggle when I hear Malloy refer to him as Raisin Brain. I just want to tell you that fascism has been coming to America for a long time. And it's been here for a long time. Let us not mistake a lack of historical knowledge and perspective for reality. Do you think Smedley Butler in 1932 or 34 would have written War is a Racket and talked about basically being a corporate enforcer for United Fruit if this country at that time had been behaving in the fashion of the republic set up and established by the framers of the Constitution? Because I don't. A republic staying true to its principles doesn't go to Vietnam, let alone stay there as long as it did. It doesn't invade Grenada. It doesn't support secret, covert death squads in El Salvador or fascist right-wing thugs in Nicaragua. It doesn't try to overturn a popular revolution on the island of Cuba. It doesn't have leaders not to its liking taken out in Chile and Argentina in favor of right-wing fascist thugs who will happily do the bidding of the United States. It doesn't do that. It doesn't support coups against democratically elected prime ministers in Iran. It doesn't do that. And there's something disturbing about the hissy about NDAA that carries more than a tiny little bit of the whiff of white privilege to it. Consider, if you will, something that I have mentioned in the past, to wit, that here, on the third day of January, 2012, in the United States of America, God bless us, amen, there are more persons of color warehoused behind bars than there were colored slaves in the entirety of the Old South in 1860. Just take a minute and deal with that. Folks have been getting disappeared. American citizens have been getting disappeared for a hell of a long time, but all of a sudden now the privileged white folks are looking up and saying, "What? They might want to do it to us too? Damn!" And I have no sympathy for it. I just don't. Yes, this is another step to a little more a little further enabling of a right-wing crackdown. But are we all so damned naive that we think that fascist states willingly go backward from fascism? Fascism has never died of its own weight, with the possible exception of Spain, and even that is questionable. Empires are fascist, and we are an empire. And the questions we are presently faced with is, like I said last night, you know, take Barack Obama at his face value. Sure, why not? That he will never, as he said in his signing statement, allow the NDAA provisions to be used to detain American citizens without trial. Just take him at face value on that. And spare me the emails about what a terrible person he is for now. Because we are arguing based upon evidence in the light most favorable to the president. And we will take him in the most favorable light and say that no, he would never permit that to happen. But that does not mean a predecessor won't. And that's what's dangerous and disturbing. Equally dangerous and disturbing is the fact that the Congress, for some bedwetting reason, wanted all of this. But really, this is a question of degree. Well, Bob, you know, I mean, yeah, you talked about black folks in prison, but you know, they had a trial and stuff. Spare me. Not that I'm not trying to sit here and strawman you, but I'm arguing with myself, I guess. And the argument I make to myself is, spare me. Because if you take a poor person, regardless of color, who has probably less of a functional understanding of the body politic, the society, and the culture in which they live beyond the day-to-day struggles of survival, and you inject them into the criminal legal process, and you give them, let's say you give them a public defender who has a caseload that would make any silk stocking $700 an hour corporate defense lawyer fall to the ground weeping at the breadth, depth, and scope of it, and you expect justice to be done in some court of law for that criminal defendant, forget it. And when that criminal defendant goes up the river, and we know that sentencings of persons of color as opposed to nice pasty-faced doughy pink people is disproportionate in the extreme, and we're not even yet talking about the death penalty, which is completely out of hand. When you take all of those things together, what kind of justice is being afforded to an individual of any skin tone who, in a trial for their life, has an appointed lawyer who is literally asleep during the trial? Who would dare call that justice? Who would suggest that this country, with all the highfalutin, high-blown ideals, right to confrontation, right to trial by jury, presumption of innocence, all of that stuff, right against self-incrimination, when that person is on trial for his or her life, and the number one judges in the country espouse the opinion that the governing document, the founding document, does not afford the right, the basic human right, not to be executed for a crime one did not commit. And there's another one of those where we'll take 10 or 15 seconds just to let that one rattle around for a little while. Really. Go read Kafka's The Trial. Read Camus' The Stranger while you're at it. Interesting. Those were Europeans writing those books. I don't know if anybody's gotten around to writing anything like that in American English yet. But it's coming. It's coming. Now that white folks' nuts are in a vice too, it's coming. Here, let's make it equal opportunity gender. Now that white folks' tits are in the ringer, too, it's coming. Because there will be an understanding of what it means to be deprived of essential justice. According to no probably all four of the rats, at the very least the Thomas and Scalia part of the rats. Inherent to the Constitution of the United States is not the idea that the Constitution finds repulsive and intolerable, the execution of an individual for a crime the individual did not commit, even when evidence later comes to light proving the innocence of that individual. I know that's... I wish there was a better way to say that, but there's really not. The highest court in this land holds not just the legal, but the personal opinion that you, not some theoretical law school hypothetical Blackacre person, you, damn it, you, that you can be strapped down to a horizontal crucifix, and that the IV with saline in it can be started into your arm, and that a window can be opened so that spectators can watch you die, and that the whole time you're innocent. You're not just not guilty. You really, really, honest to the Jesus you're about to meet, not guilty, innocent. And they hold as deep personal beliefs the idea that the Constitution does not say we ought not be doing that, this can't be. And that is of no recent vintage. That bottle is way deep in the cellar with a good finger width dust on the bottle. Now, go ahead and have the hissy about the latest piece of legislation. But I don't have just a lot of patience for it. It is a manifestation of a Congress that has gone full on corporatist fascist and is behaving accordingly. Now, we can certainly talk about remedies to that, but to act like Barack Obama owns some seminal moment in the fall of our freedoms, oh, please. I was born at night, not last night. And presidents generally always seek to expand the executive's power at the expense of the legislature's, and that has been the dynamic in play since the Constitution went into effect. Just, yeah. Some other stuff out there. Kate writing in, by the way. Subject line, brr. Glad to hear you finally have a use for the new boots. Was anyone injured in the Beckley fire? What was the cause? What was it in the area to downtown at the bottom of the hill? And no, the creams and salves from Alice and Heal and Hollers are not gender specific. P.S. No collards? You're in the deep doo-doo, boy. Probably am. And I love me some greens. I don't know how I let that get away from me. Although I must admit, I'm more of a turnip greens than collards guy, but I love me some collards and kale and mustard and all of them things. I'd eat them every day if I could. I didn't hear anything about injuries in the Beckley fire because it was all pretty much at night. As you drive into Beckley, this is sort of irrelevant, but it won't mean much to many of you, but apparently it'll mean something to Kate. When you turn up Neville Street, coming up the hill, right there where it comes to a T before you turn left and go to the courthouse, it's that little section of buildings right there on your left. One's an empty building that used to be a consignment shop. Another one is a consignment shop, and the third one I forget what it is right now. So yeah. Well, at least somebody's getting some cold weather. John's sharing in it as well. As to the weather, it's currently 8, wind chill -7, and it feels colder. That's Fahrenheit. But we're on the way to the 40s by the end of the week, which is just hell for the apple growers and maple syrup farmers up here. True. John notes something that's been on my mind as well. I'll be pulling hard for the Stillers this weekend. But I've been thinking about this game coming up. On paper, it's a terrific matchup for Pittsburgh. Should be a blowout. But think about it. Big Ben's hurt, Mendenhall's out, and that one cornerback has a blood condition and probably can't play. So say the Broncos stumble into a win. We'll be told that's because the Divine loves Timmy so much, right? So much that he hurt 3 players on the opposing team to ensure his chosen one quarterback would win? What an awful message. And what a cruddy God. And that kind of goes to something that I received in my email just a little bit ago, coming in from our buddy Isaac. Terrell Suggs, a player for the Baltimore Ravens, was on ESPN's First Take this evening. I think it sounds like Mr. Suggs is in the same place many of us are. He's a linebacker for the Ravens. At some point, maybe he'll get a shot at Timmy if, in fact, it does work out for them to get past the Stillers. Terrell Suggs said, "With all due respect," which means none, "we don't need God on our sidelines. Once again, God had to save Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos. He couldn't even give them 2 drives? 7-3? Really?" And I guess he was using the San Diego Chargers as some sort of agent of his divine plan, because it was only the Chargers that say even that. Yeah. So at least it's nice to know that there's somebody out there that's not buying the BS that's being passed around. So that's a starting place. But I want to go back to something that was mentioned during the show last night in passing in my conversation with Sandra. And that is Rick Santorum. And for those of you who think that I am for some reason talking about the presidential campaign, I'm not. Please understand that everybody down ballot and down ticket will take their cues from the freaks in the circus sideshow at the top. And one of those freaks is Rick Santorum. You might recall that in an interview, Rick Santorum said, and I quote, "I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money." Which you will be forgiven if you just... What the... Right. But here's the part you don't know. And that is the original question that prompted him to answer in that truly revolting fashion. You know, I'm a primary sources kind of guy. Dr. Bill and Professor Keith Lilly have taught me to be one of those. it's not nearly as important that I repeat Santorum's quote as that you get to hear it yourself, hence this.
Bottom line is, I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money and provide for themselves and their families. And the best way to do that...
Oh, listen to him clap. Listen to the white people clap.
The manufacturing sector of the economy...
Yeah, we got to get the manufacturing sector rolling again because... And the white people, they just clap. Oh, that was such a white little room. Oh, it was. They just clapped. Because they want to help the black people, too, by not giving them money. But here's the kicker on that. And like I said, I'm returning to the story because it's kind of got some legs. I know things tonight that I didn't know last night. One of which is the question that was asked that led to that response. Now, you just heard that, right? I don't want to help black people out by giving them other people's money. So if we were doing some forensic reconstruction work of a linguistic nature, and we were to ask ourselves, what kind of a question would lead to an answer like that? I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. Are you with me when I suggest that one would naturally think that the question would be, I don't know, what are we going to do about all these black people on welfare? Would that be a fair question to lead into a response like that by Bro Fromix? Or how can we help the black population of America that's in poverty aside from giving them welfare? That's another forensic possibility, isn't it? Cognitively speaking. One question, question A leading to answer B, right? Well, no, it turns out. And this tells you so very much about the way that whatever those thin, gray settlings between the ears sloshing about inside Rick Santorum's skull that pass for brains work than just about any of his other pious pronouncements. I mean, remember, this guy's got a greatest hits list as long as your arm now. I'm holding a paper towel and it's not a beer and queers aren't marriageable. Huh? It reminds me of my wife who, given the proposition that all mackerel are fish and all fish live underwater, will conclude not that all mackerel live underwater but that trout live in trees or that if she buys kippers it will not rain or even that I do not love her anymore. Thank you. When I was learning logic, I learned that Monty Python bit because it made everything so easy to comprehend. And that's how those thin gray settlings between Bro Fromix's ears work. Because the question that prompted, this answer.
Bottom line is, I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money and provide for themselves and their families. And the best way to do that is to get the manufacturing sector of the economy
Yeah. The question that prompted that answer was, how do we get off this crazy train? We've got so much foreign influence in this country now. And Rick Santorum's answer is, I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money. I mean, how do we get off this crazy train and you get a crazy train answer? Mr. Santorum, how do we stop hunger in the world? Well, we stop hunger by not feeding black people so much.
It's the same thing. The question was about foreign influence in this country. And given that it was a right-wing audience in Iowa, I think. Yeah, it was in Sioux City, Iowa. That could have been some Romulan concerned about AIPAC. Or maybe it was someone concerned with Rupert Murdoch's pernicious influence on the media landscape. Or maybe it's somebody concerned with Keystone Energy's influence in the government and that pipeline that stands to ruin water for millions of people by coming down there. It could have been anything. But I will go out on a limb and bet a $5 bet. No, I'll bet $10,000 of Mitt Romney's money that it was not a person concerned about food stamps or aid to women and infant children or even aid to families with dependent children or Medicaid, because none of those things are functions of foreign influence on the government of the United States of America. This is just bizarre. Be damn czar. But since it involves Bro Fromix, Rick Man on Dog Frothy Mixture Santorum, it only gets weirder. Oh, Hunter, Hunter, Hunter. Why did you have to leave us, Hunter? You told us and we did not listen. Or you told us and we didn't fully appreciate the gravity and the sincerity of your offering. When the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. And maybe, lo and behold, in this year of the apocalypse, 2012, with the shadows creeping daily down the spine of Quetzalcoatl at Chichen Itza, the weird are running for president. They've turned pro, and when you're that weird and that pro, there's only one place left for you, and that's the White House. Or it's the only place left suitable to your monstrous egos. So it gets weirder. The quote did get around a little bit.
I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money.
And all the obliviousness that attends that. The obliviousness of not realizing that the greatest welfare recipient per capita and per stir pace and percentage
is white folks.
Just like you, Rick. Not just that. No, CBS interviewed him about the comment. And they made sure that he really did say black people. And bless his pointy little head, he owned up to it and said he did. But then, having owned it, he offered an excuse. And his excuse was to blame more black people.
Brrr. when he was asked about it, Scott Pelley of CBS asked him about it. And I'm having trouble with this just because it's so darned hard to square up. Well, let's see if we can use some more primary source material. Right? Something about, and you know, whenever a Republican gets caught in one of these sleazy little moments of manifest racism, bigotry, prejudice, homophobia, fill in the blank, they always claim they've been taken out of context. What do you think? Would man on dog go there? Let's find out.
From the starting line of the race for the Republican presidential nomination, we're in the library under the dome of the state capitol building in Des Moines. That dome soars 275 feet above ground and is covered with 23-karat gold. But more precious than gold to the Republican presidential candidates tonight are votes. And one day before the caucuses, they were trying to win over the nearly half of voters who say they haven't settled on a candidate yet. The latest polling shows Mitt Romney in the lead with 24%, followed by Ron Paul at 22%, Rick Santorum 15%, and Newt Gingrich at 12%.
Who cares?
Santorum is on the rise. In the past month, his numbers have more than doubled, while one-time front-runner Gingrich has seen more than half of...
Do you hear the horse race quality of the coverage? Nothing about issues, just about the numbers. Oh, and here comes Santorum on the inside track. He's 8 horse lengths back, but he's going to the whip, and he's in the inside rail, and it's Santorum, it's Gingrich, Santorum, moving up on the inside on Romney and Paul. It's Romney and Paul with Santorum on the inside rail. This is professional journalism. But never screw all that. This is just the fluff.
Support evaporate. We asked Santorum today if Iowa is make or break for him.
Well, we have to do well here. I don't think there's any question here. We have to do well. I've said from the beginning that there are really three primaries now, and Ron Paul has his own primary, and Gingrich and Romney are sort of fighting and for the establishment primary, and that Ed Perry and Bachman and myself who have sort of...
I love that Ron Paul has his own primary. Ron Paul has his own planet, but then again, so does Romney and so does Huntsman, but okay.
Trying to be the conservative alternative.
Even if you do well here, even if you win or come in second, do you have the legs to go the second round, the third round, the fourth round? You're running on...
Again, now we're in a boxing metaphor. Horse racing, then boxing. What do I keep telling y'all about understanding sports as the American national metaphor by which we communicate? Just saying.
Shoestring.
Well, we're running on. No, we're shoestrings. That's an insult to shoestrings. You know, we've done it the old-fashioned way, and
we're running on fetish power.
It's had quite an appeal. Being someone who's not afraid to answer the questions, not afraid to make themselves available to the people in front of the cameras, and be able to handle those questions.
You know, Scott Pelley, why couldn't you just say, hey, Rick Santorum. Why did you say you don't want to help blacks by giving them other people's money? Why'd you single out black folks, Rick? Oh, no, you gotta make nicey, don't you? You gotta make nicey and ask the little boxing ring question and talk about shoestrings and...
We've been able to raise more money here in the last, over the holiday weekend, been able to raise more money than we raised in the previous couple of months, and it's... That's an encouragement to us. And
that's the door-to-door fetus program.
We can start building out our team a little bit as we look to the other states.
But before he looks to other states, there is controversy for Santorum in Iowa. It came after a question yesterday in Sioux City. Santorum started talking about welfare and brought race into his answer.
I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money. and provide for themselves and their families.
You said that you don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money.
Notice he starts trying to answer before Pelley even gets the question out. He doesn't even want it repeated. He wants to overtalk it and start offering his excuse. 5-1 on context.
I've seen that quote. I haven't seen the context in which that was made.
You made the quote! What do you mean you haven't seen the context? You are the context, you weird little right-wing freak! I will not put a straw in a tequila bottle tonight.
And yesterday I talked, for example, about a movie called...
Wait, here comes the excuse. Okay, so it's a context issue, and then the excuse. He doesn't know the context in which he made the statement, but he does know the excuse for why he made it. Are we square? Yeah.
Santorum started talking about welfare and brought race into his answer.
I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money and provide for themselves and their families.
You said that you don't want to make black people's lives better giving them somebody else's money.
I've seen that quote. I haven't seen the context in which that was made. Yesterday I talked, for example, about a movie called... Waiting for Superman, which was about black children. And so I don't know whether it was in response, and I was talking about that. So let me just say, no matter what, I want to make every lives better. I don't want anybody. And I think if you look at what I've been saying,
about
my concern for dependency in this country and concern for people not being more dependent on government, whatever their race or ethnicity is.
Now, here's a guy who is wearing a brand new hoodie, a brand new Iowa Hawkeyes hoodie that some... dependent upon the kind. See, he's dependent. He told you he's going door to door trying to scrape up money on the backs of fetuses and married gay people to continue his weird, bigoted, homophobic, racist campaign. But he's concerned about those people's dependency when this guy is a walking dependency. But they're in Iowa. He's walking around with new clothes on his back, a new jacket on his shoulders. And when confronted about his racism, and Scott Pelley couldn't even ask him, Rick Santorum, are you a racist? At least ask! Oh, no, I want to make everybody's lives less dependent. Because you can't say, I just want to eliminate all forms of social safety netting. You just can't do that. Unless you're Ron Paul. There was nothing in that exchange about Waiting for Superman, but lo and behold, Waiting for Superman is a movie about black children. Really? I thought Waiting for Superman was a sort of apologetic for charter corporatized schooling and a wholesale attack on the unionized teachers, because that's the way I kind of took Waiting for Superman. It's like saying, let's find an appropriate reference. It's like saying Gone with the Wind is about draperies. Does that work? Yeah, I think so. And so it is that I talk about these people not because I'm interested or think that he's got a chance of being president. He doesn't. He's got a pretty damn good shot, depending on how he pulls out the rest of the way, at being a vice presidential nomination, which is probably what he's after anyway. Because it would involve not working and prattling on a lot about fetuses and stuff. But at no point in that exchange, and nothing heretofore, there's nothing that resembles an apology from Rick Santorum for that sleazy-ass comment. You know why? Well, let me square this one up for you real quick-like. It's because Republicans don't apologize. That's what people with fairly well-developed senses of morality and ethics do when they have wronged someone. You know, people like Alan Colmes. In a moment in which heat, real heat, could have been brought to bear on Rick Santorum, bless his little heart, Alan Colmes deflected it all away. Because he showed up on Radio Rwanda, at which point, you know, he was there to be the liberal who gets asked about the right-wingers. And I ask you again, journalistically, what's the point? Because it's not like he's going to be able to do what we're doing here and sort of point out that, you know, the Republican Party is a very top-down affair, and that the positions espoused in this clown car race are going to filter all the way down to your local alderman's races. Because it's the way elections work. At least on the Republican side, they have their talking points and they're going to work them. I think you get my meaning. And in the course of talking about Rick Santorum, Alan Colmes mentioned the business of Santorum taking a dead fetus home to show it to their children, the ones who were living. And I don't care about the email on this. I find that just sick as hell. Weirder than weird. Here you go, little Susie. Snuggle the corpse. See, you love the corpse, and the corpse loves you. Well, this is what got said. We'll get there in a minute.
Let's bring in our Newswatch panel. Rich Lowry is...
Yeah, Rich Lowry. Oh, dear. You know, this is not going to play out well.
The editor of the National Review, also a Fox News contributor. Alan Colmes is the host of the Alan Colmes Show and a familiar face here at Fox. So is Rick Santorum surging, Rich, because of media attention or in spite of it?
In spite of it. He made this happen on the ground, John. He went to all 99 counties, ran a very traditional Iowa campaign at a time when a lot of the smartest pundits were saying, you don't need to do that traditional work anymore. It's all about the debates, and it's all about national advertising. So this surge is a product of hard work and a product also of all the other anti-Romney candidates collapsing around him.
Alan, does it deserve to be rewarded?
It's certainly hard work that he visited went to every part of the state. And it's also that the Republicans have speed dated every other Republican, and so there's nobody left except Rick Santorum. But once they get a load of some of the crazy things he said and done, like taking his two-hour-old baby who died right after childbirth home and played with it for a couple of hours so his other children would know that the child was real. I mean,
that's a cheap shot, Alan.
That's not a cheap shot.
That's crazy.
No, it's not a cheap shot.
No, it's not a cheap shot. It is reality. He did it. It would be a cheap shot if he had not done it, and Colmes said he did it.
And that is that personal embarrassment is losing a child.
I didn't interrupt you, Rich.
And to mock it like that is really beyond the pale and beneath you. You are mocking him.
No, mockery was what I did. Colmes isn't as mean as me. Holmes just reflected on what had been done. And 99% of the people that hear that go, oh, yeah, that's twisted.
That is, yeah. Rich,
I didn't, first of all, I didn't interrupt you, but I'm not mocking him.
I'm interrupting you because what you're saying is contemptible.
Let me know when you're done.
Well, you want me to keep going?
Let me know when you're done.
They lost a child, Alan. That's very serious, and it's not something you should be mocking on
national
TV.
I'm not mocking
TV.
The losing of the child, but what I'm saying is I think it shows a certain unusual attitude for taking a two-hour baby home to die
to
play with his other children.
You might think that's a legitimate issue to bring up against him and to mock him about.
Listen to how desperate Rich Lowry is to keep Alan Colmes from getting that story out into the public. Because even the weirdos who watch Fox News, Radio Rwanda, they're scratching their head. Marvelline, did they really do that with that little baby corpse? Yes, Emery, they did. Well, Marvelline, that ain't right.
Well, you know, come to think of it, Emery, I think you're right. There's something a little strange about that, isn't there?
But Rich Lowry is not going to let that get out.
I'll tell you what, Republican voters aren't going to
think
that.
Let me know when I can speak, okay?
Go ahead. If you want to continue to mock that, go ahead, Alan.
I'm not mocking it. I think it shows.
Yes, you are. You're saying it's going to hurt him
Go ahead.
The Republican electorate?
Go ahead.
That he lost a child?
If you want me to be in the segment, let me speak.
To deal with that loss?
Let's move on to something that Mike Murphy said. He is a Republican strategist who was on Meet the Press over the weekend. Here's what.
Do you understand? Of course you do. Isn't this just a perfect example of everything that is wrong with for-profit 1% media? It is a legitimate point. It is a legitimate question of whether it is appropriate, not just for the members of the Santorum family, but anyone, to bring a dead newborn home, dead, not, you know, a little bit alive. No, really, pining for the fjords. In which, and this is just science, this is just biology. This is just the way it is on this little blue-green time machine orb hurtling through the universe. This is just how the process works. To bring home something that is not a person and has already begun to decompose. Oh, no, it looked fine to us. No, it's dead! The process begins the minute death begins. Or life ends. And whether you use the phrase play with it or whatever, I mean, it doesn't get any prettier if you refer to it as corpse snuggling. It was a corpse. And lo and behold, so of course the for-profit 1% media runs back to Bro-Fro-Mix and tattles everything that just happened. Hence the headline, really, Santorum blinks back tears in Iowa. Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum grew teary-eyed Monday when a voter asked him to respond to criticism of the way he and his family honored the life of their son Gabriel, who died shortly after birth. We tried everything we could to save his life, and we failed, Santorum said, blinking back tears before a crowd of roughly 150 people at a Pizza Ranch restaurant in Newton, Iowa. He was delivered. He lived about 2 hours. He was delivered at about 3 o'clock in the morning. He lived and he died in our arms. We brought Gabriel home to bury him, and we brought him home so our children could see him. His wife, Karen, and this is a quote, told all of us that it was so important to recognize, for the family to recognize, the life of that child and for all the children to know that they had a brother. Now, I will defer to people like porn psychotherapist Rick Goodner as to whether this is good for little children to see, children of 3, 4, 5 years old, children of 12 years old. Here's your... And paint as pretty a face on it as you can. It is still a matter... of taking a corpse home. I mean, under this thinking, when some loved one you love, well, I'm certainly working, I'm a master of the language tonight, aren't I? Someone dies, the appropriate thing to do is to cart the corpse home and everybody just snuggle in love on the dead one. I guess I should have done that with my dad. We should have unhooked all the hoses and wires and cables and tubes from my mom and propped her up and just sat there and smollocked around on her. Jesus, that's sickening. But suddenly it's a story about Alan Colmes, not about the manifest, twisted weirdness of the Santorum clan. And this is just the beginning of the evening. David in Tennessee noting, and please remember, Santorum as vice president should scare us just as much as Palin scared us. Any doubt? None. Santorum's actually scarier because he won't make the overarching, overweening gaffes that Palin did. Oh, he'll answer questions about foreign influence on the government by talking about black people on welfare, but he did that because he was in a room full of white people who are largely probably bigots in the first place in Iowa. That would not be his answer in South Carolina. At least certain parts of South Carolina. Our buddy Andy noting, have you heard that Fox's chairman Rupert Murdoch and Glenn Beck came out to endorse Rick Santorum for president? You think they want a horse race? Anything to take away from the Ron Paul vote. Issues that would take real journalism in America, that is so 20th century. It's so true. They got to keep the horse race alive. But even Rupert, I guess, has a little bit of a problem in light of something one of his paid correspondents said. That being Mike Huckstorby. I actually found this kind of interesting, really. Mike Huckstorby noting... Oh, what were his exact words here? Let me... He said that the presidential contenders really don't... Now, granted, yeah, Rupert Murdoch, in one of his very first tweets, said he endorsed Santorum. But Mike Huckstorby, A, came out critical of super PACs. If he could have had some super PAC money in 2008, you can bet your last dollar he would have been all for them. Yeah. But more notably, Mike Huckabee also said that he doesn't think any of the Republican candidates for president have any interest in anything other than replacing Barack Obama, and that absent a real plan for recovery, that's sort of pointless. And you know what? He's right. That's all they're focused on. Getting that one out of their White House. Which tells you a lot about, saying things like, I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money. Huckabee said, if I walked in the... Now, of course, it goes without saying that Huckabee would not vote for the Democratic incumbent. But Huckabee said, if I walked in the booth today, I'm not sure who I'd pull the lever for. It appears to me, and it still does to a large degree, that many of the Republicans are more interested in just defeating Barack Obama than they are in rebuilding America. Defeating somebody without a plan to really resolve problems, to me, is a worthless endeavor. Whew. Under the subject line, Rick does take out David in Tennessee. Can't you just imagine that actor Michael Keaton at the window of the morgue? Really, you want this one to go. Most people do delivery. I remember that. By the way, I have been offered a great big four-slice bagel-sized brushed stainless steel toaster, oven included, awarded to me this evening by Kate on the Front Range. Gone with the Wind is about draperies. Oddly enough, and ironically, says Kate, that's the first scene I imagine when I think of that movie. And then there's this. And you wish that Alan Colmes had as quick a mind as members of the Horn family, because Ron and Raleigh just sent this along. Get your head around this, Bob. Imagine, if you will, what Repiglickens would say if it turned out that Barack Obama had brought home a dead baby to cuddle with. The mind boggles. I can't even begin to think of what the hopping up and down, bat wings flapping back and forth, monkey screeching, cacophony would sound like on Radio Rwanda. And CNN, and Headline News, and MSNBC, and. Good God, David Gregory on Meet the Press would have he'd be dragging in drunk Republicans out of bars to talk about what a sick freak Barack Obama was for bringing a corpse baby home. Reverbo also noting, from one freak to another, are you aware that Santorum is Glenn Beck's choice and he has compared the frothy one to George Washington? No, really. Stuff like that just make it's almost like I turn into an automaton, and the straws in one hand, the tequila bottles in the other. David in Tennessee noting Kate was spot on, and the Keaton movie was Night Shift. Yeah, that was the because Henry Winkler was in it, too. It was Michael Keaton's first big break, walking around with a micro, talking into a microcassette recorder, saying things like, I'm really more of an idea man. Yes, Marty, the frothy one. Santorum does mean a frothy mixture of, that you probably know. Bro-fro mix. Frothy mixture. Bro-fro mix. That courtesy of Michael Kid A from the chat room. So I think I've gotten the evening's filibobster out of the way. I think the appropriate thing to do at this point in time would probably be to open up the phone lines. You know the number, of course. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. If you don't need us to carry the freight via the toll-free number, that's great. If you do, that's fine too, though, and that number is 877-443-2366, 877-4 head on. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. If you've never been to the chat room, this would be a great time to wander in. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's big fun. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be back. The Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012.
Did you feel it? A 4.0 magnitude earthquake hit the Youngstown area.
Oil and gas earthquakes, now in Ohio.
If we started hiring scientists instead of lawyers, we would be able to do our job for the American people.
Well, that didn't take long. A federal panel blocks EPA's new air pollution standards. Big oil cage match as BP sues Halliburton for the Gulf oil spill. Plus,
what we need to do is pass the mother of all repeal bills, and I would begin with the EPA.
Saddle up. We've got what's in store for 2012.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Global warming is not proven. Second, even if it were proven, there are a lot of different solutions other than cap and trade.
Well, that's funny, Newt Gingrich. You used to be in favor of cap and trade. And what do you mean it's not proven? What are you, a paleontologist or something?
I also am an amateur paleontologist.
Oh, right. And I'm an amateur particle physicist. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too.
I hope you enjoyed your short but sweet break from the green grid over the past few days.
Yes, and the green news just keeps on coming, Newt Gingrich notwithstanding, and just want to point out that the professional paleontologists really do beg to differ with them.
Okay, well,
don't quit your day job, Newt.
What day job? Press on.
A whole lot of shaking going on in Youngstown, Ohio.
The whole house shaking. I thought it was going to cave in. The walls were shaking. Windows were shaking. It was really scary.
Ohio state officials have shut down 4 oil and gas injection wells in Youngstown, Ohio, after 11 earthquakes struck the area since the injection wells first opened a year ago. The largest was on New Year's Eve. It measured a 4.0. Seismologists say the earthquakes were, quote, almost certainly caused by the injection wells. Now, these rare Ohio earthquakes are not caused directly by the process of hydraulic fracturing or fracking itself, but by miles-deep underground injection wells where oil and gas companies permanently dump massive amounts of contaminated wastewater after fracking operations are completed. Injection wells and fracking have been linked to a rash of earthquakes in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Colorado, and even Britain.
This is amazing. Of course, the fossil fuel companies all blanket the airwaves with ads saying that fracking is perfectly safe. But before the end of the year, we got confirmed that fracking seems to have poisoned drinking water in Wyoming, and now it's causing earthquakes?
Yep, and Ohio residents might want to consider buying earthquake insurance. French oil company Total on Tuesday announced it will invest $2.3 billion, that's with a B, in Ohio's natural gas fields.
Wow.
The BP oil spill 1 year ago was AP's number one story of the year, which, of course, ended up being a non-story.
Yeah, Rush, it was such a non-story that BP is now suing Halliburton for $42 billion in damages.
Billion?
Billion with a B in the oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. BP is suing Halliburton to recover damages that will cover, they say, all cleanup costs, damages, and lost profits it incurred in cleaning up the 2010 oil spill, the worst in U.S. history, that killed 11 workers. Halliburton's failure to properly cement the well has been identified as the root cause of the disaster.
These standards are 22 years in the making. They have not been a surprise. They are based on technology and science, and we believe based firmly in the law.
That was Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lisa Jackson at the unveiling of the first ever national standards to reduce toxic mercury pollution emitted by the nation's power plants. And just as Jackson predicted, less than a week later, the pushback from the industry is already underway and has collected its first victory. On Friday, the D.C. Court of Appeals blocked the implementation of a section of the new rules that would restrict air pollution that drifts across state lines. The cross-state air pollution rule would control emissions from power plants in 27 states that the EPA says affects the health of people living downwind. The industry argues the cost of installing modern pollution controls is too expensive and the deadline is too soon.
Good. I'm glad that the courts are finally pushing back against that commie leftist socialist George H.W. Bush, who forced the EPA to put these rules into action 22 years in the making.
Finally, with the end of 2011 came the end of the energy-wasting light bulb. Now, of course, you can still buy incandescent bulbs. They'll just be new and innovative and will save you more money and energy.
I don't understand. Fox told me I wasn't going to be able to buy incandescent bulbs anymore.
Yeah, that's why Fox News people don't know what they're talking about. The new light bulbs will also help taxpayers from having to build 30 new power plants in the coming decades.
Job killers.
Also gone with 2011 are federal tax credits for the ethanol industry that Congress declined to renew. Now, looking ahead to 2012, President Obama must make a decision on whether to approve the Keystone XL pipeline within the next 2 months, and agriculture and farm subsidies will expire this year, so Congress will be negotiating a massive billion-dollar farm bill amidst the 2012 insanity circus that we call the presidential election.
For all of those stories and much more that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can download us anytime via iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your first of the year Green News Report.
Come on over, baby, a whole lot of shaking going on. Yeah, come on over, baby, baby, you can't go wrong. Honey, I ain't faking, I got a whole lot of shaking.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
You know what we need to do at some point in time? We need to make an intro for Bob Screwed Up stopping at the top of the second hour, and it's the second half of the program or something like that. But feel kind of silly with 25 minutes left in the second hour, right? The second hour top intro. That, well, that might be confusing on the podcast one. Oh, well, I'm probably just worrying about things that don't really need to be worried about. But with regard to BP suing Halliburton, as you heard there, Dave in Tennessee noting, and should BP prevail some 20-plus years in the future, Halliburton will either bankrupt to dodge the judgment or write the check after getting a comparable congressional fatback payback. I think that should probably be, trademarkable or registerable somehow. Fatback payback. That's what happens with oil companies, coal companies, you know, hydrocarbon energy industries generally in the Congress. After getting a comparable congressional fatback payback so as to make scratching of said check harmless to their bottom line and the sacred shareholder. Georgia writing in. I haven't heard from Georgia in a while. It's good to hear from her. Reverbo saying that Santorum has been compared to Washington left me thinking that dentistry is so marvelous Santorum's teeth don't look a bit like wood. Now, if they could just do that to his brainless head, that would be a real breakthrough. I swear, those people really leave me shaking my head. Keep fighting. Love to all. Hugs to Agnes. Signed, Georgia. Really, good to hear from you. And just Georgia has been listening for a long time. And just to let you know that I'm not the only one out there with a twisted sense of humor. Bill, referring to Bro Fromix taking his taking the corpse home. Bill notes, it's a good thing his older kids weren't studying biology at the time. Whoa. Yeah, indeed. And our buddy Michael, out in California. Again, you guys come up with some dandies on the fly. With regard to the horse race metaphor and the horse race reportage, Michael offering this. And on the outside, Santorum is surging from behind. It's got to be hard to be a professional comic anymore when so many people can do it so well for free. That's a great line. That's just a great line. A reminder, we do have a challenge out this evening. Our buddy John offering to cover the, to double 10 or five $10 thrifty 250 contributions, you know, up to $50, offering to match that this evening. And so far, I hate to report, but no takers. Hopefully that will improve. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Jim. How about you?
Oh, it's been a day. I have a dead modem, so I'm listening to you vis-a-vis the telephone network.
Oh.
That's always fun, isn't it?
Are you, well, given what went down in Beckley, are you sure it's the modem?
Who knows?
I mean, so I would imagine there had to be some sort of electrical line involvement in that conflagration last night.
Well, I think probably a surge blew it. So I'm going to have that replaced. And I, of course, ran diagnostics and attempted to see if it were the power strip or the plug. And you know how these electronics are. So there.
Right. But you tested it the right way. You start cheap and move uphill.
Well, that's what you have to do. And luckily, I just rent them things from the local ISP, so they're going to have to send somebody out here Thursday to see if they can get it going again. But it's kind of an inconvenience to do without your email, and you know.
Well, it really is. In a relatively short period of time, we have become quite dependent on it.
No, we have. Yeah, I don't know what happened in the fire in Beckley, whether it was artificial lightning or whatever.
State Farm lightning, I'm told it's referred to in some places.
Say what?
State Farm lightning.
Well, I've heard it called Jewish lightning. Please forgive me, but that's what I've heard all my life. Arson, that type thing, but who knows? Who knows? Good Lord.
Yeah, down on the southern end of the state, it's State Farm lightning. Just like a poached cow in a field is referred to as slow elk.
I guess, and I make any apologies for using the term Jewish lightning, but that's just a term that I've heard. But basically, you know, what can I say?
Well, you know those kinds of cliches are out there, and we can't deny their reality.
I bring that up for for a specific reason, because of the very term. You know, how can you tie arson to an ethnic group?
Exactly. But by the same token, think about, this is sort of a continuation of our language conversation from last night, Jim. Consider how many other ones out there. The term that is commonly used, especially in the South, for improvising a repair, and we shan't mention the actual phrase, but everyone knows what it is. Let's see. These kinds of things.
You don't have to go into that. I know what you're talking about.
No. But I mean, let's see. A Scots mist is a soaking rain. Was it diaphragms or condoms that were once referred to as Dutch caps?
Oh, yeah.
you know, it's just a means of adding a little bit of disparagement into something that we otherwise lack language with which to describe it more beyond the ordinary prosaic of saying, well, you know, he fixed it, or he bought a condom, or man, it's raining outside.
Right. Well, as far as mishaps are concerned, the very word sabotage comes from the French word for shoe, sabot.
Right.
And that's when workers used to throw shoes into the inner workings of machinery to create shutdown. So, you know.
Yeah, to literally jam the machine.
Exactly. But, you know, going back to your filibuster of earlier this evening, I can only think of two things. First is, as far as this guy's words about denying black people food and money for a living, to me, this is nothing more than, and I don't know, I don't like to use these terms, really, but it's a form of ethnic cleansing.
Well, yeah, it kind of is. Or not even kind of. It is.
Well, I mean, when you deny people the basic needs of life, I mean, you don't have to shoot somebody to diminish their numbers as a race or an ethnic group, do you?
No, you don't. There are myriad forms of disparagement.
And there are all kinds of ways to do away with people and minority groups without actually costing the amount of a bullet. Do you?
Absolutely correct.
I mean, in history, we've seen what Adolf did to people he didn't like.
Sure.
When he began to...
You demonize... It's actually processual, Jim. You demonize... You do the mental and the emotional dirty work of demonizing someone and dehumanizing someone, and then you can move on to the actual physical accosting, assaulting, killing, maiming, beating, robbing.
Elimination.
Yeah, and it's all there in the timeline, and it's all part of a set piece.
I mean, for example, the Nazis, when they first started out with the Jewish problem, and I can still remember Hitler's address when he annexed Austria, and his last words were, "Now we have the German Empire."
And wasn't that all under the subheading of Lebensraum?
Well, yeah, and he wanted to reunite the two countries, and within 72 hours of his rolling into Vienna, you had all types of horrible things happening to people he didn't like in Vienna, like Jews and people like that. I mean, they were scrubbing sidewalks, they were being rounded up, shot, and horrible things were happening after the Anschluss of 1938. And, you know, it's history repeating itself, being cyclical again, you know? But like I say, when you want to say that people are on welfare or people who are depending on social programs to be denied these social programs, I can't see any difference between actually just shooting them outright. As a matter of fact, if you do that and reduce these people to absolute penury and then absolute a horrible ending because they don't have access to food and medical care and housing and things like that, the thing is, they'd be better off dead.
And, well, regardless of better off, that's how they'll wind up. And, frankly,
I mean,
that's...
I say with trepidation and with fear in my heart. I really do.
But understand that that's okay. The only use that Republicans, warmongering Republicans, have ever had for the poor were as cannon fodder in the first place. And that's generally the way it is with all authoritarians.
Well, it's always been a rich man's war and a poor man's fight. You know that, and I know that.
Exactly.
And, of course, the poor man, when he comes back and he's damaged physically and mentally beyond any means of repair, of course they have, you know, better programs, I think, than they may have had. But just exactly how can you compensate an individual who has lost his means to live like a normal human being? with hopes, desires, and aspirations. I ask you that. How can you do that when you have put them in harm's way, or when the only profession they can have is to go into a situation in which they're placed in harm's way, and they come back horribly maimed, mentally or physically, with no real hope of recovery?
No. And see, that's, but there are elements of that also, Jim, inside, and that's why I came back to the story from last night to this to tonight. One, just to put the denouement on it, but two, to point out that presidential election or no presidential election, Santorum would have said something like this somewhere along the way, because he holds poor people
in contempt.
In contempt.
And he himself is just that much. How close is he to being reduced to one of those ranks? You know?
Well, I mean, he admits in that Puff interview piece that he's been out begging. He says that to say that they're running on a they're running their campaign on a shoestring is an insult to shoestrings. Well, ha ha ha, that's very funny. That's cute. But he has been out doing the political equivalent of panhandling.
Well,
and has the nerve to criticize people on public assistance? You know, for all intents and purposes, Rick Santorum has been running around Iowa with a cardboard sign that says, "We'll demagogue for money."
Well, these people are nothing more than social vampires and political vampires. I mean, you know, they take everything and they give nothing back. And going to Rick Santorum, in addition to what I said about ethnic cleansing, the only other word I can offer as far as he's concerned, and his past actions, what you've referenced this evening, is necrophilia in some bizarre form.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, basically.
No, I mean, I'm happy you said that, because there is something. Yes.
There's got to be some connection. I mean, back in Victorian times, they used to take people who had died, and they would prop them up on chairs, so they would take dead babies and put them in cradles and dress them up, and they would take photographs of them, because I've seen too many of these things, you know. And there was a book that I, years ago, had called Wisconsin Death Trip, and it was a whole montage, a photographic montage, of nothing but dead people propped up in chairs, and so they were alive. And
just
the reason,
a Victorian version of Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, exactly. And they wanted to remember the person as they were in life, but I just can't see the connection myself.
Well, really. Is it true or is it apocryphal? The classic Irish wake, at least at one point in time, included propping the departed up in his casket with a drink in his hand, in his stiff hand, so that people could come and toast him and clink glasses with him. That's about the only thing that even resembles sanity in my book.
Well, I can remember my dad when he was a young man. He had a friend who committed suicide, and basically what his wife did, they had the body in the parlor, and of course she put a throw on the casket, and they had an all-night poker game and got drunk, because she said that's the way Dan would have wanted it. And my father used to tell that story all the time. This was back in the 30s when he would, when this happened, late 30s. And, well, I mean, I don't see any problem with that, because that's probably what the guy would have wanted, because he loved to drink.
Yeah.
And whore around and play cards. So, I mean, you know, that's the way his wife did it, and that's the way they did it. It was okay, but there weren't any exposed.
Yeah, and in some segments of deep Southern culture, those were not vices, that was a lifestyle.
Exactly. And, you know, I can remember when the late President and Mrs. Kennedy had their son, Patrick Bouvier, when he passed away because of a hyaline membrane type of thing and just could not breathe anymore. I don't remember John F. Kennedy or Mrs. Kennedy doing that sort of thing.
Bringing the baby home and having John and Carolyn snuggle it? No, me neither.
Exactly. What they did, John Kennedy broke down and just cried like a child at Otis Air Force Base when Mrs. Kennedy realized and the doctors realized that the little boy could not make it because of a hyaline membrane. But they didn't do that kind of stuff because they had some decency and class and sense of respect for the dead.
But understand, Jim, and maybe I didn't, and I don't think I've touched on this, but when we're talking about what Rick Santorum did, understand that this is a set piece of dog whistling to the so-called the right to life movement. Okay. Oh, listen, looky there. The baby was dead, and they treated it like it was just a member of the family. See how awful abortion is?
That is just totally sick.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it's mentally and physically repugnant. I mean, once a person has passed on, then you go to another level. And if remembrance is your thing, you don't do that and bring home a dead baby and show it to your children who are in their...
Well, all I can think is based upon the people I've known in social work and so forth, if a family of modest means did that, Child Protective Services would be in, and Child Protective Services got wind of it, they'd be in the house yesterday to make sure that the children were not mentally or spiritually or emotionally abused out of it. That is scarring stuff, Jim.
I mean, who does this kind of stuff? A Hollywood director? Who's the one who specializes in all this stuff? I can't remember his name right now. But as far as this fixation with corpses and...
Well, no, I think, you know, you're trending toward a word that I think is the ultimate descriptor for what this sick man did. And that word is macabre. It is macabre. It's the definite, you look up macabre in the dictionary and there should be a picture of Rick Santorum having a 6-year-old snuggle a corpse. I mean, that's macabre.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. But like I said before, the roots of this thing go back into the late 19th century, and when people would do this sort of thing, and it's just totally something beyond me. And I don't know what else to say. I mean, I couldn't do it, and once that envelope of flesh has released its spirit or soul or whatever you want to call it, it's time to take it to the next level.
And without going into any deep-seated theology or dogma, Jim, if I understand the piety of Rick Santorum, which he wears like a hair shirt. Doesn't his faith say that the dead body is no longer the vessel of the spirit?
Yes, it does.
Has the spirit not departed? As such, is that dead body? It's no longer even representative of what the baby was, or the full-grown human. Anybody who has ever watched a person pass, I mean, there's a very, very stark line between alive and dead.
And it's a very traumatic thing. You've been through it. I know you've been through it. And, you know, I just don't understand people's or his version of death. You know, I really don't. I really don't understand why he
because
did that.
You know the excuse was proffered that they brought the corpse home so as to assure the children that their baby brother had really been a baby brother.
Well, that's just totally fatuous. That's ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure children... How old is the other children, the ones who are surviving? 12?
Oh, they're like the Duggars. They've got a dozen or something. No, I mean, they've got a big family, so to speak. I'm not sure how many. I remember the one little girl when he got beat for his Senate race back in 08. You know, she stood there on the stage and bawled. And it was just sad. I don't know why you'd subject your family to that or your children. You know, here's a guy who's worried about people, get this, he's worried about people becoming dependent upon the government, right? I mean, he said that. And yet, you know what his parents were? They were both employees of the VA Administration Hospital in Butler, Pennsylvania. And the family lived in government housing on the VA hospital post. His father became a licensed clinical psychologist as a result of government money.
Well, that's like Kasich's home. Is that Kasich? Is that the guy? His father was a mailman.
Yeah, and
a federal employee.
The guy who wants to kill Medicare, Paul Ryan, out in Wisconsin.
Right.
He went to college because his dad died of a heart attack young, tragically, sadly, very sadly. But he collected Social Security dependent benefits, dependent survivor benefits, so that he could get a higher education.
Well, probably so that he could eat.
And yet, you know, he's got his, so screw y'all. Screw everybody else.
Yeah, it's a hell of a lot when you've got people forgetting where they came from and how they were brought up and how they were able to survive in any type of sense of majority. And then they want to deny the same benefits which they themselves enjoyed to other people.
And understand, I mean, just to add a little background on this.
Utter selfishness.
Yes, absolutely. So the business with Santorum and that dead baby. They have seven children, okay? Mrs. Santorum went into labor at 20 weeks pregnant. And at 20 weeks pregnant, she allowed the doctors to give her oxytocin to speed up the birth process. Now, here's where it goes. So not only after the baby was 20 weeks, in other words, 16 weeks premature.
Why was that done?
I don't know.
I mean, was that medical advice?
I guess.
That were earlier?
So here's a 20 week preemie that can't live outside the womb that they bring home, but they didn't just bring it home, Jim. They brought the dead baby in, showed it around to their living children, and said, "This is your brother Gabriel," and then they slept with the corpse overnight before they took it to be interred.
They slept with the dead baby.
Yes.
Well, that's just all messed up.
Now, understand that Santorum is one of these pre-Vatican II weirdos.
You know, I can understand why in Jewish rituals and in Muslim rituals, too, I think, they want that corpse interred within 24 hours.
Judaism and Islam both require there are rituals you go through to cleanse the body, then the people who cleanse the body go through rituals to cleanse them.
Exactly.
And then the body is interred within 24 hours of death.
Right. I mean, you don't have this, this American way of death, which is totally bizarre. I mean, there's a very interesting book by Jessica Mitford called The American Way of Death. And it's an interesting read. It was done by Jessica Mitford, who was the sister of Unity Mitford, who also wrote the book, not Unity, because she shot herself, because she was a devotee of Hitler and Jessica was a devotee of Stalin. But nonetheless, Jessica Mitford went on to write The American Way of Death and also Cruel and Unusual Punishment, about the treatment of prisoners and how pharmaceutical companies would give these men in jail extra cigarettes and candy to test new drugs and things
right.
like that. And the chapter in that is called Cheaper Than Chimpanzees. Jeez. And the reason I bring that up is just, in my opinion, and it's just a total lack of respect for human life and dignity.
Absolutely. And I want to take you back just for a minute to a little more detail on Santorum, because beyond the weirdness of the dead baby thing, there's a lot of weird going on there. Like I said, he's one of these people that believes that Vatican II, and you know what Vatican II was.
Yes, I do.
Vatican II was a giant heresy. So he will not hear the Mass done in anything but Latin. Okay?
I just wonder what his understanding of the Latin language is. Beyond what he was taught, basically in catechism,
right?
So I just wonder how well versed he is in Latin.
Yeah, I'm guessing he would probably get more lost than even I in trying to comprehend the subjunctive. But in 2002, 9 years ago, he traveled to Rome to speak at the 100th anniversary celebration of the birth of Saint Jose Maria Escriva, who, of course, was the founder of Opus Dei. Now, Jose Maria Escriva was, and I don't use this term loosely, I use it in its realistic term, Jose Maria Escriva was a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding fascist. Like Spanish Civil War fascist.
Yeah, I think she did support Franco.
Yeah. Okay. And what's more, he's the guy who was quoted as saying Hitler got a bad rap. They accused him of killing 6 million Jews when he couldn't possibly have killed more than 2 million. That's Saint Jose Maria Escriva. That's a guy that Santorum thinks was a great man. Now, let's add one more here, and I know you have great reverence for the Kennedy family. This ought to put paid to Rick Santorum for you if everything else didn't, Jim. He gave an interview to the National Catholic Reporter while he was in Rome in 2002. And he said that John F. Kennedy created a distinction between private religious conviction and public responsibility, and that John F. Kennedy caused, these are his words, quote, great harm in America.
Because the man could divorce his private religion from his public duty?
Yes. Santorum went on to say, all of us have heard people say, I privately am against abortion, homosexual marriage, stem cell research, and cloning, but who am I to decide that it's not right for somebody else? And Santorum said, it sounds good, but it is the corruption of freedom of conscience. So when John Kennedy served secularly as president without being impacted by his own personal religious beliefs, in Santorum's words, he corrupted freedom of conscience.
That's a lot to swallow.
It's a bunch. Well, add to it this. Santorum also refers to George W. Bush as the first Catholic president of the United States.
The first Roman Catholic? Or is that what he meant, basically?
No, he says George W. Bush was the first Catholic president of the United States. In other words, John Kennedy was not really a Catholic.
Oh, my Lord.
This is the quote. From economic issues focusing on the poor and social justice to issues of human life, George Bush is there. He has every right to say, I'm where you are if you're a believing Catholic.
Well, hell, George started out as an Episcopalian and then became
a Methodist. A lot of people think he was Southern Baptist, but no, he's a Methodist.
Yeah. I mean, he couldn't handle the high church or whatever. I guess it was just, the rituals was just too complicated for him. Who knows? I don't know. But Lord have mercy, these people and the way they think and what they say and the reason for which they say it, I simply cannot. I can't get my head around it. And I'm not trying to waste time here.
No, you're not. But I think it is so instructive to delve deeply into the bizarreness of what Rick Santorum is, because every hateful thing he said, you know, the man on dog comment, the things that he has said about gay people in general, the business about black folks and welfare, the fact that he says if he's president he will personally annul, you'd think he's running for Pope or something, but if he's right. president he will personally annul every gay marriage in the United States.
How can he do that?
Well, he can't.
I mean, you know, you may
but the thing is, all of these statements, and I just want to be abundantly clear in this, Jim, all of these statements don't happen in a vacuum. They are a product of ideology. They are a product of doctrine and dogma. And he comes from that same weird, dogmatic, doctrinal place as Mel Gibson. That Vatican II was a heresy, and that everything you've just heard.
Well, Bob, Vatican II was one of the greatest steps forward that the Church ever made, the Catholic Church ever
right.
made.
Right, and in the minds of the Mel Gibsons and the Rick Santorums, the Church does not make steps. The Church is eternal and unchanging, even if history says it's otherwise.
You know, my God, what's the difference between that type of ideology and National Socialism or State Fascism under Stalin?
Not a heck of a lot, because both of them, well, I mean, at least National Socialism and Italian Fascism, they both co-opted the Church.
Yeah, they sure did. You know, as much as I respect as I would like to have for the See of Rome, and I have my own ambivalence about this sort of thing, and we talked about this before, but, you know, there is a separation between church and state, between religious doctrinal issues and political issues. And you've got to keep those separate. You really do. You really do. But for you or for him to take private beliefs for whatever reason, and I just wonder what their reasons are, and I always like to just get into their inside their heads and just ask, you know, well, what's going on here with you?
Oh, if you did, you'd run screaming from the room, Jim.
I have before. And
I mean, it's all gargoyles and spiders and creepy crawly things.
I know, it's like something out of a horror movie or whatever. But I mean, you know, it's just I don't know. But I mean, you did surface the issues of depriving people of welfare benefits and things like that to keep them alive and in some form of dignity. And you did surface the issue of Mr. Santorum and his bizarre beliefs, and that's the reason I sort of hung on. I'm glad I did.
I'm glad you did, too. And since you are without connectivity, I will put you back on hold so you can finish the show, too.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I just, it really causes me a very deep sense of alarm if and when these people, you know, take control.
And they will not be happy until they do. They won't give up.
I mean, you know, I'll say this and I'll get off here. We don't have to have a 2012 with the Earth core heating and the Earth's crust beginning to shift. I mean, with these people, my God in heaven, they're going to change the face of the Earth and put it in their own image.
Well, you know, what is it? Is it in Revelations where it says, "And I beheld a pale rider, and that rider was death"?
Yeah.
Well, in the case of all these pasty-faced, doughy, white, right-wing, authoritarian, fascist Republicans, I think it's more like I beheld a pale cavalry.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
And their name is Legion.
Yeah, exactly, Legion. Just many, 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 many. And all done in some type of pretext of their religious beliefs, which I don't think are really genuine, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe they're genuine to them in their own warped psyche, but I sure as hell can't see it.
Well, it's a matter of that old bumper sticker. If your God hates all the same things you are... No, if your God hates all the same things you are... I can't talk. if your God hates all the same things you do, chances are he's not real.
Well, Bob, the only thing I can say to that in closing is this. These people say they're on God's side, but I don't think God's on their side.
Far better they worry that whether God is on theirs. Abraham Lincoln was right. Thank you, Jim. Have a good evening. I'll put you back on hold.
Thank you, sir. Have a nice evening yourself.
Take care, and I hope the modem gets fixed soon.
Yeah.
I know. Later, Jim.
Bye.
Bye now. And Jude, my dear sister Jude, up in Washington State, remembering some more of Rick Santorum's greatest hits, I referenced that poor child bawling on the stage the night that Santorum issued his concession of his Senate seat. Jude writing, the child not only cried on stage while Senator Santorum gave his concession statement, the little girl hugged her doll with all her might. It was one of those moments when one could, from a distance, observe, even with a broken heart, even with her heart breaking, that no one provided comfort to her. She stood there crying with that baby doll in her arms for all to see. Why wasn't the film crew and the crowd present stopped and the little girl comforted by her parents? Says Jude, the visual is seared in my mind, Bob, seared forever. Because those moments, the test of humanity is that in moments of horrible grief, we reach out in some even poor attempt to transfer empathy via some level of comfort giving. And Jude's right, they let that little girl just stand there and weep in God knows what kind of terror and fear. And of course, it's not that far different from the fact that that poor little baby of Sarah Palin's was trotted out like a sack of potatoes and handed from one Palin family member to the next while she politicked on its back and talked about her care for special needs children and their parents. David in Tennessee noting, Bob, you and I are Southern. Within our shared embrace of our culture, there's a given. Does don't get above your raisin raise a memory? And these freaks, the FDR, literally gave a chance at something better. They want to stop the process? Because that is the old Southern feudalism. David is absolutely right. Don't get above your raisin, son. But liberal Democrats of 80 years ago, progressive people were thinking otherwise. That it was time that folks were able to get above their raisin. Because not getting above one's raisin, well, it is feudal. And it is a class-based society that this entire nation was allegedly founded on erasing. And then also another memory dredged up, Tim in L.A. writing, speaking of Republicans and death, remember this? And it's a quote from young George was joined by a sister, Robin, in December 1949. The Bush's third child, John, called Jeb, was born in February 1953. Only a few weeks after Jeb's birth, blood tests showed that Robin had advanced leukemia, a disease that is often curable now, but about which little was known back then. Robin died that October at the age of 3. And on the day that Robin was buried, Barbara Bush and George H.W. Bush went out to the club for a round of golf and left little George W. in the care of the housekeeper. Tim noting this was also the same effed up family who left a dead Robin at the hospital, making George W. Bush the mess he is today. Do you folks, asks Tim, do you folks see a pattern yet from the Christian right? Pattern, practice, habit. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, I had no idea about Santorum, that was why he responded the question.
Yeah, that kind of beat the pants off of me, too.
A
question about international finances impact on federal government, and he starts talking about welfare?
Yeah, no. I mean, the only explanation is what you said, you know, the company that he was in, because it's just so out there. And the fact that he's so surprised that someone dared question him about it, you know, these people are just, he is so out to lunch.
Well, and again, you know, he was the one talking about context, but context is king here.
Well, no, I mean, just, you know,
there's a reason he is what he is.
Not just expose them for what they are. I mean, it's always the deserving whoever with those people, and minorities and who else besides them aren't deserving, because you didn't hear nobody making noise about aid from the government, you know, when the New Deal was being created, because it was mostly white people who was benefiting from that. As soon as it's expanded, then they start moaning. I mean, the Tea Party people, they want their Social Security and health care, right? I mean, it's just so blatant, you know?
Help me here, Sandra. It is blatant. And is the right wing so morally stunted that they cannot see how repugnant this is? Or are they just so goddamn mean that they don't care? Because there's not a whole lot of room for anything else in there.
Well, I think it's that, because how they operate with how they want to suppress the vote gives you an insight in that, because they know that what the shit they selling ain't going, you know? So they have to keep the rest of the people at bay. Indeed, they do that by introducing a new type of poll tax. I mean, if they are able to disenfranchise the number that's been floated out there, 5 million, you know, that's almost a game changer for Mr. Obama if there's a lack of enthusiasm coming his way. So, you know, it's a real problem. So I guess they can just spew whatever they want, because if they think that they're controlling the ballot, then it don't matter what they say.
At the same time, though, Sandra, maybe it's another one of those moments where we're referencing the correctness of a stopped clock, but Mike Huckabee is right. They're not running for anything. They're just running against.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, he's just a real complete weirdo. And, you know, I'm sure if he was to get on a broader stage, there's no way, because he's really too far out there. But what I really called about is this sort of weird fetish that these progressives are having with Ron Paul. I mean, it's doing my head in, because like I wrote to you and said, all sorts of atrocities existed when the Bill of Rights has been in full effect. I don't know if you touched on this early in your show, but I suppose the Bill of Rights is a problem now that Whitey might be at risk. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's exactly where I went, Sandra.
Okay, I didn't know, because I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, give me a break with this sort of hand-wringing over Ron Paul. And I also add that the idea that this fool is going to stop an empire, empires end because they're weak and enemies. Can we get that straight? No, you know, I'm sick of it. It's like that asshole ain't going to stop nothing. You see what I'm saying? What he will do is destroy the rest of what we hold dear first. Trust and believe that shit. So this whole thing about him managing our empire, that's some bullshit. It ain't working. People are confused because they have in their eyesight Britain. Britain was lucky, okay? Their asses was hella lucky because they had the huge, ginormous friendly United States behind their asses. Otherwise, they would have been laid waste like the Romans before them. So
yeah, we were the soft landing, were we not?
And we need to note that shit all the time. And I think Americans are really, they're ignorant. They don't want the war. I'm sick of the wars. But there is no understanding of what states do in the international arena. We are there to preserve ourselves. And I fall squarely on the realist side of it. States will self-preserve. The U.S. is out there making enemies by the hour. So, no, it ain't going to be no kumbaya, please stop the wars, we are sorry world. No, no, no. So Ron Paul ain't going to do shit in that regard. And I'm sorry to come out like this, but I'm damn sick of it. I'm like, you tried it with Obama, you saw what he did. You know, thank Truman. He set it up, and it's been like that ever since. You just plug one in and press the button.
Yeah, put the nickel in and walk away.
It's empire. And people really need to understand, like I said, I'll say it again, weakness and enemies will end the empire. And so that's scary, ain't it?
And yet at the same time, you know, we were talking about Iran and the whole setup to all of it. They issued another warning today or yesterday. I don't know if you noticed this. You probably did. They told the USS John C. Stennis to stay the hell out of the Straits of Hormuz, or things were going to get bad in a hurry.
Mm. Well,
and of course, you know, the way we'll respond, we'll turn the John C. Stennis around and sail back through it, and you know, keep poking them with the sharp stick until they shoot. Allegedly, first.
Right, and you know, and you have to sort of maintain the propaganda in just a full mode when you're maintaining an empire. I mean, you don't think that England and Rome had a propaganda machine? All empires do. And I think Germany, when they were in their heyday, that was all about land and expansion too. I mean, all the empires operate the same. And the U.S. is just clouded with all this drivel about the Bill of Rights and Constitution. But we see how that applies if you're not a certain type of person.
Oh.
The Santorums of the world.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and that was, you know, that was the nature of my opening rant, was to suggest that, basically, unlimited detention without real justice is nothing new in this country, depending on who you are, because you're not getting justice when your appointed lawyer is asleep while you're being tried on a death penalty charge.
And it wasn't until 1963 that you could even get a damn lawyer.
There you go.
So I mean, let's not really go over the deep end about the Ron Paul thing. I mean, I'm just sort of like, are you kidding me with the Glenn Greenwalds and David Sirotas, all them people all of a sudden trying to say that, well, you know, Ron Paul is, talking in terms of whatever when he's talking about the drug war and all that stuff. I mean, that's all good and well, but he's not into intervening at all.
I've said that for a long time. When, you know, I've had people call and try to defend Ron Paul to me. And I've said, you know, okay, he's against the war. Okay, he thinks the war on drugs is stupid. He is right for the wrong reasons.
Well, no, but he wouldn't have no problems with polluters polluting everything until we just drop dead, though, because he don't want no intervention.
Right, exactly.
He's not going to stop the state of Alabama from re-enslaving folks. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. Yeah. And you know, he's right. He's right there. He's right there, happy as a clam, with that circuit court ruling that stopped the EPA, as Brad Friedman and Desi mentioned in the Green News Report, stopped the EPA from implementing the CO2 rules.
No, but somehow the womb, though, that's the water's edge, though. All of a sudden the state has it can do all it wants there. So to me, you know, like I told you before, I can't get past than the control of women's bodies. I am, you know, as a woman, it's just too much. It's like, no, I'm not going there. I don't care about these male progressives. They always step around and over that shit, much like the white ones do with the racial issues. All of a sudden, women and minorities have to take a back seat because of their civil liberty fetishes. But like I said before, my mother had to bow down and scrape, and the Bill of Rights was in full fucking effect. So no, I'm over it.
Exactly. And and you know, the whole idea of perspective, that this is driving me a little bit crazy, and I am by no means, I think everybody knows, I am not a serial defender of Barack Obama, and I don't think anybody would put you in that corner either, Sandra. But to act like this latest piece of legislation is some sort of seminal break in the dike and with regard to our civil liberties, no, that's bull. Yeah. It's just bull. It's been going on, and it has existed. And that was the same conclusion I drew, is that suddenly white folks are thinking they might be the ones getting a taste of the lash.
Well, it's really difficult not to, you know, make those sort of assessments when you look at in a holistic way of what America is all about. You know, I'm sorry. It's just kind of like, you know, you know, calm the hell down. As far as I can tell,
and maybe put a strategy in a long term strategy, Sandra. And I know that's probably way too difficult for most folks on our side, and that's not me being smarmy or elitist or smug, but we don't have. See, the Republicans and the fascists and the right wingers and the authoritarians and the dominionists and the religion industry and the banking cartels, all those people that are opposed to us, they have plans for what America looks like 100 years from now. Meanwhile, our side is sweating what America looks like at the longest, at the furthest. They're sweating what America looks like on January the 20th, 2013. And you can't win if you can't look out long term.
And it's just, you know, I mean, there's just, I don't know. I guess I was just disturbed by the sort of lack of understanding from these so-called progressive thinkers about the, you know, international relations. It's like, you know, don't get me wrong. I am not a fan of Henry Kissinger. But please, 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 that horrible war criminal understood real politics, you know? And if you're going to exist thinking that, you know, one administration or one individual at this late date in our country's development is going to turn around an empire that we have, I mean, you're begging. You are dreaming.
Yes. And what's more, what I was saying about long-term strategy is that we've got if you get to the point where you acknowledge reality, and I guess some people actually are, then the next thing you have to do is figure out how to undo it. That's why I got so excited about that Montana Supreme Court decision yesterday evening.
Yeah,
and that's why you know, listen, and maybe this is the crux of it. If we had the power right now to go and undo the piece of legislation that Barack Obama just signed into law, and to say there shall be, to state unequivocally, there shall be no, to the extent that that's not in there, it would barely be a beginning, because then you'd have to go back and revisit the way Congress treated habeas corpus, and then you'd have to go back and revisit the Patriot Act and the re-upping of the Patriot Act. And beyond that, you'd have to go back to practically, well, in excess of 100 years of constitutional precedent by the Supreme Court interpreting away the Fourth Amendment. Because ultimately what we're talking about here is the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's just, I couldn't agree more. And to sort of try to reduce it to, I guess I'm just, you know, too through with the whole Ron Paul thing, because he would just turn everything over to the states. And we have seen that movie, all right?
Yeah.
And it's not pretty.
Because...
he has more control over doing something like that right away than he would any kind of, oh, today, my fellow Americans, we're closing all bases. Dream on.
Ain't gonna happen.
Anyway, yeah, that's all. I just am sort of like, I mean, I'm, you know, I understand that people are quite excited that, you know, a national figure would actually utter the words of drug war and blacks in the same breath in that manner. I too am quite pleased to even hear it out there. But if Ron Paul is going to be useful, let him be useful in bringing it up in the public discourse. That's it.
Bring it up and go hammer and tongs for as long as breath is left in you in the House of Representatives. Because at last I checked, the president does not get to pass legislation.
Right. And, like I always say about Marx, you know, it's amazing tools for analysis. Ron Paul can be that. But don't let him anywhere near the fucking White House.
No, or Santorum.
Well,
any of these other loonies. But the point of Ron Paul, though, I think, is what you will see as the campaign season progresses, Sandra, is you will see something happen on the right, and probably more effectively than it did on the left. If you recall when Dennis Kucinich ran for president in 2004, nobody wanted to pay any attention to him. But the guy started talking about free trade, and he started talking about health care, and he started talking about the wars, and he was absolutely 100% unblushed correct about everything he discussed, and lo and behold, slowly but surely, it begins to dribble and drabble over and leak into the campaigns of John Edwards, and next thing you know, there's John Kerry, the nominee, talking about the very same things. So don't think for a minute that this stuff will not have some transferability over to the rest of the Republican crowd and, you know, Willard Romney or whoever winds up being their nominee. He has already had an impact on it.
Oh, no, and I think it'll continue mainly because we know what the polls say repeatedly. The American population is sick to death of the wars. They don't understand why we're still there. It's a huge problem. So any candidate that's talking about it, it's going to get traction now because we've been at this bullshit for year after year after year now, and it's starting to look nonsensical like it is. But, so that's why I think it's a good thing that it's being talked about, because someone like Obama is going to have to explain eventually, if it keeps coming into the public discourse, what the hell you're doing in Afghanistan? What the hell is going on with the drone killings? You know, I just think that is the upside to Ron Paul's foreign policy. But on the other hand, you know, I'm not moved by Dennis Kucinich talking about, oh, if he was running for president, he would consider Ron Paul a vice presidential material.
No, that's crazy talk.
I remember Dennis Kucinich used to be anti-choice.
Yes, he did. That's absolutely true.
I was like, yeah, and, you're going to get him to change his, you know what I'm saying? I just wasn't, that didn't do nothing for me either. I'm like, well, whatever, dude.
But, you know, I think Kucinich's change was sincere because he is a man of, he's a man of considerable intellect. Whereas I don't see that kind of thing happening on the other side. I don't think he decided to be pro-choice simply because he wanted to get more traction.
But the thing is, I'm just using that. I just thought that was kind of, I mean, that's supposed to, I guess, throw more progressives Ron Paul's way. You know, I don't know. I don't really know. I'm not too sure. I guess the Iowa thing, I don't know. Is it finished yet?
Little known or will long remember, as Lincoln said. I guess now they're Central Time. They're probably just caucusing their little hearts out right now.
All right, because New Hampshire is next week, isn't it?
This Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, it's
a week from tonight.
I'm already weary from it. Goodness.
Well, and it's the same thing as with 2008. By the time we actually got to 2008, I was already plumb wore out from what had gone on in 2007, because it was, what, April of 2007 when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton showed up at that Baptist church in Selma and both of them started speaking Southernese? I was plumb wore out by December 31st, 2007.
See, don't even go there. That, you know, that was the cringe odometer was way over in red on that one. That was terrible.
Meanwhile, Andy, out in California, noting that Ron Paul, yes, he is bad overall on domestic issues, regulatory constraints, civil rights, racism, corporatism, and so forth. But lo and behold, today I heard him denounce the death penalty, which is pretty cool for a Texas racist Republican, says Andy, who sticks it to about everybody, especially the Israelis, Benjamin Netanyahu. He's a, Mr. Paul, this is a great line. This is a toaster line, Sandra. Mr. Paul is a serial abuser of about everybody. But I do, Andy says, love it when he sticks it to the Israelis. I call and thank his office every time he does it to the Israeli racist genocide machine. He's brought up the drug war in the public discourse and has pontificated that far, far too many blacks are imprisoned in proportion to their population and the infractions they commit compared to whites. And that's all true. But by the same token, Ron Paul will not denounce the for-profit prison industry. He doesn't believe
and the environment. Everyone should be
right.
Living fear.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
fear hell, live in poison.
Well, So because, you know, anyway, I don't know. I'm not going to say anything else about Ron Paul. Obviously, you know my opinions about it. But at any rate, I just am kind of, you know, it's like, I don't know what, I don't know if they're suggesting that they will vote for Ron Paul now instead of Obama or what. You know, I'm not too sure what the end game is here, but anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be interesting because, you know, again, second reference to Hunter Thompson this evening, the hogs are in the tunnel and they will travel on a road of bones.
No, well, on a completely unrelated note, oh my God, I just repaired my computer and it had like 500 infections on it.
Oh Jesus!
And now it's just running like I just pulled it out of a damn box.
Well, and we got the Horn website got hit by a hacker earlier today.
Oh no!
Yeah, just one page, but we looked there and it was. Something about you've been hacked by so and so of Indonesia.
Like a tag?
Well, it was a full page that they put there.
No, I'm saying, though, is that what they do? They kind of like just let you know that it happened?
Yeah.
God, I mean,
it doesn't look like there was anything nefarious in there, but God, that'll probably involve eons of code checking.
Well, no, this one. You know, created a new login when I, you know, turned it on. It was like some new. Anyway, it was over the top, and you know, and of course, you know me because I have my various copyright issues activities. So I guess this payback is a bitch.
Peter Godbold used to note that there are parts of the internet that are just really nasty, sleazy, dirty little streets you don't want to go down.
Yeah, anyway, so, I mean, I realize that's really random, but the gist of that is that I'm so excited because it's running really fast.
Well, it is, and see, I've got to do that, too, because this main production computer I've got here is sick, 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 sick.
Yeah, well, and, you know, to be honest, if your computer is reasonable, because I mine has a warranty until 2014 on the hardware, so that's why I went ahead and did it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's worth it. But, you know.
Unfortunately, I'm the warranty on this machine, which means that at some point I have to pull it out, unplug everything, replace it with the backup computer, and wipe it and reload it, which, having done that several times now, is right up there with dental work for fun.
Well, yeah, but you know that, I don't know, because I was doing some research, and a lot of these viruses don't go away if you just do a format and reinstall.
No, it's got to be a way wipe.
Yeah.
Like a DOD wipe. Well, I do have to tell you before you go that there's been another Pat Robertson sighting.
No, I was in my mind. Are you talking about that fool talking about God telling him about the president?
Yeah, he knows who the next president is, but he's not telling because God told him to be quiet.
I know, but he said that, you know, Obama is wrong, and until he's gone, chaos will ensue. I was rolling. I said, this man, Glory, hurry up.
Go to. Yeah, do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Yeah. Your president holds a radical view of the direction of your country, which is at odds with the majority. Expect chaos and paralysis, God reportedly said.
There's some audio. You ought to share that.
No, I've got it. I've got it right here. I think I will run it.
Okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, take care, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh, no, really. Yeah, let's do this real quick. I'm going on. I'm told we've got a first-time new caller on the line. But we got to go to Pat Robertson just real quick.
I spent the better part of a week in prayer and just saying, God, show me something, and I'll share with you some things. I'll share with you. I think he showed me about...
God apparently gave him a file folder.
The next president, but I'm not supposed to talk about that, so I'll leave you in the dark.
Probably just as well,
but I think I know who it's going to be. All right, I'm going to read just what I wrote down, and I'm as if I'm hearing from the Lord these words. Your country will be torn apart by internal stress. A house divided cannot stand. Your president holds a radical view of the direction of your country, which is at odds with the majority. Expect chaos and paralysis. Your president holds a view which is at the odds with the majority. It's a radical view of the future of the country, and so that's why we're having this division. This is a spiritual battle which can only be won by overwhelming prayer. The future of the world is at stake because if America falls, there's no longer a strong champion of freedom and a champion of the oppressed of the world. There must be an urgent call to prayer. Okay. And then the Lord said, a time of maximum stress and peril, greater than at any time since the CBN ministry began. This country will begin disintegrating. Now, I thought, when did we start this place? I started CBN in, I think, 1960. Mm-hmm. We had, you think of all the things that went on. You have the assassination of President, the assassination of Martin Luther King. You've got a war in Vietnam. You've got all these things. He said it's a worse stress than before. So I'm saying, God, let me give you some suggestions, and you tell me if any of them is right. You know,
the hubris involved with this, because you know he and God are just doing lunch. You know, they're over there. They've been to the steamboat round the roast beef trimming buffet, and you know, they got a little of this, a little of that, nice salad. And oh, God, let me give you some suggestions. And see, the fact that there's no breaking news out there that Pat Robertson's a greasy spot is further proof that, well, Pat's talking to himself again. And they've got meds for it, but frankly, it's like the old joke about the woman who goes to the doctor and says, my husband thinks he's a chicken. And the doc says, well, why don't you tell him he's not a chicken? And she says, well, I would, but I need the eggs. Well, see, this is that. Everybody knows that you could give Pat the special medicine that helps reverse this kind of thinking, but they need the eggs. Because there are millions of people out there who tune into him and, absolutely, the Lord is... Oh, God.
One. So I said, is it an EMP blast? No, that isn't it. Is it a cosmic or solar radiation blast? No. Is it the Mayan galaxy?
Is it bigger than a bread box? Is it smaller than a camel?
See, alignment? No, it's not that.
Which will shock many.
Is it Iranian or North Korean nuclear threat? No. Is it an earthquake or a volcano? No. Is it a massive power failure? No. What is it? It's an economic collapse. And God said, and I quote, this is not my judgment. They are bringing it upon themselves.
So, in other words, God has become Bart Simpson saying, I didn't do it, it's not my fault. That's some reassurance. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, okay, hi. I'm Margo.
Margo, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, yeah, I was sort of egged into it, so I hope that I do a decent job being a caller for you.
Oh, I think you'll do a magnificent job, especially if you've been put up to it by that crowd in the chat room.
Yeah, yes. I'm basically a reporter, and I've been reporting on the occupation, especially Occupy Los Angeles. I was at the Occupy the Rose Parade yesterday.
Yes, I read about that.
Yeah. So, I guess they wanted me to talk about that. I know you're talking about other stuff, and And it's hard to follow Pat Robertson. I will admit, I was a little nervous to follow someone like that, you know.
But so, you know what? Once we've got all the crazy out of the way, normal is just refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah. I used to watch Pat Robertson in the mornings, and I always felt that I was privy to some sort of secret, like, crazy... You know how Al-Qaeda and all of them, they got their secret message boards where they plan their chat, their attacks, and I felt like that's what I was being privy to, and if they knew that I was watching their show, that somehow my cable would get disconnected.
Yes, I know. No, I do. I understand exactly what you're talking about. It's like getting to stay in the monkey house after the zoo's been closed.
Right, exactly. And that guy is phenomenal, absolutely amazing. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised. I guess you just have to say that anyone who thinks that they have such a connection with a supreme being, you know, they must really think very highly of themselves or just be very delusional.
They do, and I think they also take, it's inherent in the likes of Pat Robertson that they take the rest of us for chumps.
Yeah.
Because they have been supported and carried along on these vast tidal pools of chumpage. Literally since 1960 for him.
Right, and I mean the way media has become so controlled. I remember during the Bush administration, I really started calling it institutionalized mainstream media or institutionalized media, because I felt that when Fox News came about and the way that the White House press corps was controlled by the Bush administration, that it had really become an institution of the political machine. And I think that even now, and the way that religion plays so much into conservative politics, that it's so hard to get people to see the reality, because the reality that they see on television is just so far from it. And I think, if you say one thing over and over again, you know, people start believing it, whether it's true or not. You know, you can plug it into the social consciousness and people buy into it without any need, without ever fact-checking, because journalism is supposed to be fact-checked. And so you watch it and believe, oh, I'm watching the news, this is supposed to be true.
This is supposed to be real.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so people like Pat Robertson certainly have it very easy in that regard, because the people who watch him, they watch Fox News, they listen to Glenn Beck, you know. And, talk about creating a false reality. Glenn Beck certainly did a fantastic job doing that over the last couple of years on Fox News. So, yeah, not easy it is easy for them to kind of have blind leading the blind, or not blind leading the blind, but, you know, really abusing the blind, I'd say.
I think you're right. And, you know, you identify something there that Megan, was it?
Margo.
Sorry. Starts with an M. My apologies. I will not make that mistake twice. But you identify something, Margo.
What was your name again, John?
Yeah, Fred. Bob.
Fred.
Bob.
Got it.
It's Bob.
Yeah, I know.
But seriously, you identify something there, and that is how to frame what these failings of the media are and why they come from there. A long time ago, I started referring to them as the for-profit media. And I refer, and that's just anybody that's out, ABC, CBS, the rest of the alphabet soup, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, on and on and on. Because they're not there to provide content. They are there as a vehicle for selling ads around which they wrap the content that will get you to look at, see, listen to, hear the ads themselves. And the ads are about generating a profit. And it's a completely upside down model. Lately, with the advent of Occupy and the rise of the meme of the 1%, I've tacked on 1%, so they're now the for-profit 1% media in my book.
Right, and you know, it's called infotainment when you're, you know, it's not really about the news, it's about getting people to stay and through the commercial break and to get to the other commercial break. And I think what's very interesting about the Occupy movement and really the internet itself is that I think the internet is really coming of age during because of the occupation. When we've seen, you know, I think really the first of what the internet could really do during the Green Revolution in Iran in 2009, but now it's just become really, really prime, but very matured with the way that Twitter and Facebook and other social networking sites have allowed people to communicate, and also now utilizing the streaming systems like Ustream and Livestream.
Exactly. I was about to remark on the very same thing, because what the leveraging of all those technologies and all those platforms does is it allows real, ordinary, working people to do a complete isolation end run on the for-profit media, and to be the media themselves, and to be able to do it live. You mentioned the Green Revolution in Iran, and that stuff that was picked up with a cell phone and then uploaded to YouTube or something like that. So there was a lag time there, but now in so many places it is possible to do it live and to see it as it happens, and that has profound value, I think. Because it invites people to become emotionally invested in it.
Yes.
And I think it's been made huge by what we've been able to see live from the various and sundry Occupy movements.
Yeah, and I think that's really playing into why the occupation movement has picked up so much support across the country and around the world, because people don't have to tune in to their local station or to any of the mainstream news outlets like Fox or MSNBC, CNN. They can find it, and they can find multiple outlets that are just giving you most of the time raw content. But then again, that raw content can be much, even sometimes more valuable than a pre-put together package, because you don't see just what people want you to see. You can see everything. I mean, just for example, what just happened with Global Revolution in Brooklyn, they were evicted. The landlord came in and told, you know, basically broke down the door. They kicked the landlord out, and he brought the police, NYPD, to come in and arrest several of the people who run Global Revolution for Occupy Wall Street, and they also plug in other live streams. Other occupations, and you know, it's just phenomenal how that all played in. And but that, what my point is that people were able to see that as it happened. They were watching Global Revolution, and then they switched to the office, and they could see all of this happening. The police coming and everything, and you wouldn't get that. You know, you wouldn't get that on TV, because why would you can't fit that in anyway? You know. You know, you have to have your segments. You got to fit them in between the commercial breaks, and you know, their cameras aren't going to be there anyhow. It's just a very powerful way to keep people connected to what's happening. You know, just
and see, it will continue to evolve, but it'll go from that raw feed footage to running up and putting a camera in people's faces and letting them speak their truth. You don't have to necessarily have somebody like me tell, you know, it's not the Hindenburg, you know, oh, the humanity blowing up. It's beyond that. It's asking pointed questions and letting people personally empower themselves by speaking truth to power. And you can't overestimate the value of that, because the for-profit 1% media, whatever, institutional, as you note, they are never, ever, ever going to let that happen. Because there might be some advertiser out there that doesn't like what gets said. We've seen that happen a number of times on Fox itself.
Right, and even on that same point, the companies that own these networks, such as MSNBC, I mean, it's now half owned by Comcast, but GE paid zero taxes, and in fact, they got you know, tax returns, huge tax returns from the IRS. So you have a company that is running a news network that has a particular agenda and particular interest to keep, and giving, and also, the network, the hosts on MSNBC do give a relative good amount of coverage or have given to the occupation, but the first journalist or news host to really do that on cable television was Keith Olbermann, and he read the Occupy Wall Street, demands or resolution live on the air. And what I noticed following that was that while on MSNBC, Lawrence O'Donnell began picking it up, Rachel Maddow came late to covering the occupation. I was very surprised at that because of her background with Air America and all of that, but I would have thought that she would have jumped at the chance to get that on the air and to get a discussion going. So I think that despite the fact that they are allowed, you know, a certain level of you know, leeway in what they can say and do, I mean, they've got Ed Schultz, who's, you know, he's sometimes drives me crazy, but...
More times than not on my... Yes. But again, in mentioning all of those people, I'm not trying to be overtly negative, but once you start drawing the check from the people with the real walking around money, you are to one degree or another, no matter how hard you try, co-opted.
Right. Yeah. And unless you're truly doing this as an independent journalist, unless you're like free speech radio, you're not funded by corporations. If you're not Democracy Now, if you're not, and I'll just throw myself in because I don't get paid by corporations to do what I do.
Well, I don't get paid. I mean, yeah, I know. Believe me, I know from whence you speak because I don't get paid. And we've been doing this since 2000. Since October 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, our sole goal is to raise enough money to keep this going until maybe one day we can figure out a better model that will allow people to go forward. This has been a wonderful conversation, Margo. I hope it will not be our last. And I have to let you know. You have a request from one of our correspondents, our Minister of Culture, whose name is David from Maine. He promised last week a gift DVD of a magnificent documentary for the next brand new caller, and you're it. So if you would be so kind just to send me your contact information so he can drop that in the mail to you. Cave of Forgotten Dreams is an amazing documentary that just, it makes your brain cells just go, wow. And we will get that to you.
Very cool. I feel like I'm on the Oprah Winfrey Show here. Am I going to get a car next?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I haven't figured out how to tape a car under anybody's cell phone or anything yet, but it's been a wonderful conversation, Margo, and I look forward to the next one.
The Rick Smith Show.